how do you think public-private partnerships can positively impact innovation and ultimately the security of trade finance? And how do we all get together and make sure that we really impact these really detailed processes?
And the public sector is, of course, there to ensure that necessary foundations are in place, be it roads and bridges, to regulations and laws, of course, needed to safeguard a market.
We would see a significant increase in global GDP, a huge boost to global productivity. It would lower barriers to entry for smaller sized companies, enhance access a variety of emerging markets into the global trading system.
I'm Brian Kena, Assistant Editor at Trade Finance Global.
Hi, I'm Stephen Beck with the Asian Development Bank. I head the Trade and Supply Chain Finance Program.
Hi, I'm Neil Shonard. I'm CEO of Monetigo, a global fraud prevention company for trade and finance.
Welcome to Trade Finance Talks, your go-to trade, treasury, and payments podcast brought to you by TFG.
Hi, and welcome to Trade Finance Talks. My name is Brian Kanup, Assistant Editor at Trade Finance Global. In recent years, the trade finance and international trade industry have spent lots of time talking about increasing financial inclusion and shrinking the trade finance gap. Regardless of the efforts and increased attention, the reality has not necessarily changed for the better. In fact, earlier this year, the Asian Development Bank released a report showing that global trade finance gap has reached $2.5 trillion in 2022. While we aren't making the progress that we want to, it shouldn't discourage the industry from attempting to change practices for the better. One of the most important factors in increasing access to financing and creating a more inclusive global economy is the acceleration and adoption of digital technology. According to the Asian Development Bank, 70% of banks say they plan to leverage new technology to increase support for SMEs, and 73% of firms believe digitalization increases access and efficiency to international trade. But the solution isn't as easy as simply telling businesses to adopt technology. There needs to be a concerted effort made by public and private institutions to come together and create a tangible plan for moving digital solutions forward and ultimately making trade an inclusive space. That's why I'm happy to introduce Stephen Beck, head of the Trade Finance Private Sector Operations Department at the Asian Development Bank, and Neil Shonhard, CEO of Monetigo, who will help us talk through some of these topics. Neil, Stephen, welcome to Trade Finance Talks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephen, we'll start with you here. The Asian Development Bank plays a vital leadership role on the continent. What are the key pillars that the ADB is working towards right now?
Thanks, Brian. Well, for those of your listeners who don't already know, the Asian Development Bank is a multilateral development bank that's owned by 68 different shareholder governments. It was created in 1966, basically to improve people's lives. The AAA-rated institution is not for profit. The idea is that the Asian Development Bank promotes development. When we put that study out, we think it's extremely important that people realize that trade is responsible for lifting millions of people out of poverty. It's an incredible vehicle for development, but it also has its drawbacks, right? I mean, you've just cited that there are trade finance gaps. And so we want to drive more inclusion in trade, meaning we want to provide more financial support to small and medium-sized businesses owned and led by women that have a particularly difficult time accessing financing to participate in trade. We want to ensure that trade is made more green, more resilient. We saw out of COVID that resilience is an issue in supply chains and trade. We need to ensure that those supply chains are strengthened so that we get the goods when we need them, where we need them efficiently. And we need to ensure that there's transparency in trade. Crime has a major impact on our societies. Of course, there's human slavery, trafficking in illegal wildlife, drug crime, a lot of which is moved through trade. So we need to ensure that trade is much more transparent so that we can detect these kinds of trade, these kinds of crimes. We also need to ensure that trade is socially responsible, particularly with respect to how labor is treated. Trade is a wonderful vehicle for development. It's an extremely important part of Asian Development Bank's mandate, but we need to close financing gaps and we need to address some of the shortcomings of trade, including some of the elements that I've just mentioned, Brian, along with, of course, greening trade and supply chains, which are responsible for a significant amount of carbon footprint.
MSCs, women inclusion, green resilience, transparency, crime. These are all topics that are present across the world, but especially they're challenging and ever-present in developing economies. The World Trade Board highlights digital and data infrastructure as being foundational to creating and helping the types of inclusion financing. And the ADB is actually a founder of the ICC DSI, which helps enable digital trade. Stephen, how can MDBs play a role in shrinking the trade finance gap with a special look on digital inclusion?
We believe that if we can digitalize trade, it would truly be transformative on a number of different levels. We would see a significant increase in global GDP, a huge boost to global productivity. It would lower barriers to entry for smaller sized companies, enhance access to a variety of emerging markets into the global trading system. It would also drive a certain level of transparency that would help us tackle so many of these issues that I mentioned earlier, whether it's crime, trade-based money laundering, whether it's the kind of transparency that we could drive through transparency, through transactions and supply chains to be able to better identify, you know, what's happening in terms of labor pools and environmental sustainability. Once you have that level of transparency that digitalization will bring, there are all sorts of things that we can layer on top of that, including the kind of information that will help financial institutions have a better understanding of the risks that they would be assuming of financing to small companies. So we're very excited about the prospects of digitalizing global trade. It's long overdue. It's an antiquated, outdated sort of architecture for trade that we need to tackle. And so that's why we created this Digital Standards Initiative, along with the Government of Singapore and the International Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you, Stephen. Thanks for that. The ICC DSI you mentioned is founded by multiple different institutions. And that leads me to my next question. Neil, how do you think public-private partnerships can positively impact innovation and ultimately the security of trade finance? And how do we all get together and make sure that we really impact these really detailed processes?
Thank you, Brian. So I think it's important to recognize how public and private are different. The private sector is great at innovating in using technology and more to solve problems. And the public sector is, of course, there to ensure that necessary foundations are in place, be it roads and bridges, to regulations and laws, of course, needed to safeguard a market. So where MDBs, multilateral development banks, are important, if not inspirational, is how they can often bridge the gap between public and private, creating inclusive markets, ecosystems, and economies. Examples of this are countries like Singapore, which have bridged this gap, where the central bank MAS and the Association of Banks have stepped in to address fraud in the trade finance ecosystem to safeguard the market, thus ensuring that the ecosystem is prosperous, inclusive, resilient, and to Steve's point earlier, having increased transparency. In countries where they might not have the ability to do this, this is where MDBs like ADB can and do step in to enable these public-private partnerships to eradicate poverty in a trade finance capacity, I guess, enable SMEs and MSMEs, as Steve mentioned, those communities to have access to financing, thus enabling economies to flourish, drive inclusion, and bridge that much-fabled trade finance gap.
Absolutely makes sense. And we've all mentioned the annual trade finance gap report. And even though I talked about it in the intro, no one knows it better than Stephen. So there are many technological solutions that can address these challenges facing de-risking MSME financing and changing the game on trade finance products. But scaling these solutions, you know, leads to the question of when is the right time to digitize? My next question to you, Stephen, is what would be your guidance for financiers who are not sure when to start their digital trade journeys, which could help ultimately decrease this trade finance gap?
Yeah, that's an important question, Brian. I think that a lot of companies of all sizes grapple with. And this is really what we aim to help. Because I think a lot of companies, first of all, when they think about getting into the digital journey, they think, well, if I acquire this, it's not going to be interoperable with that. If I acquire this, you know, are there going to be different technologies that come up pretty soon that renders whatever it is that I've spent a hell of a lot of money on obsolete? Enter this Digital Standards Initiative. As you may know, Brian, and I know you know, Neil, that really there are two objectives. I mean, ultimately, it's to digitalize global trade. To get that done, we need to do two things. One is to agree on the electronic form of some 30 paper documents that are used today in trade. And two is to have laws in place that recognize those electronic documents. If we can accomplish the digitalization of trade through the standardization of these documents and through legal systems that recognize those documents, I think then the decision for companies becomes a lot easier. Then, regardless of the platform, you're going to have, hopefully, all platforms complying to the standard electronic documents that the DSI has created. So you eliminate that issue. You're not going to have people thinking, well, look, if I operate with electronic documents and there's a problem and I need to go to court, well, the legal system may not recognize these instruments. Just go back to the work that we're doing with the Digital Standards Initiative. We're also bringing multilateral development banks together to complement and to boost the work of the DSI, the Digital Standards Initiative, to try to move the needle more quickly to get this done. And I think that once we do, then the decision for companies becomes, you know, a lot easier to launch into the digital journey.
Following on that, are there any new developments that we should be looking out for? Any specific examples that you can give us here?
Yeah, Brian, with respect to advocating that countries adapt or align to the model legislation that was created by the UN, there are multilateral development banks, including Asian Development Bank, that have been advocating with governments to adapt or align to the model law for electronic transferable records, or MLITR. And so we've been working closely with the PRC and Chinese officials, with officials in Georgia. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development has been working with Turkish authorities on these model laws that are required for the digitalization of trade. And as I say, the Digital Standards Initiative has been doing its work. And recently, we've been bringing together a group of multilateral development banks, many of them, most of them actually, the key ones, to sort of decide which countries and which sort of trade corridors we're going to identify to really focus our advocacy for adoption of this legislation that's required to get digitalization of trade done.
Hey, enjoying this podcast? Hit that follow button for more. Done? Let's get back to it.
Great to hear about so many different organizations, countries, and MDBs coming together to further digitalization of a trade. Neil, what do you think MDBs and intergovernmental agencies should do to help scale up products like yours, like Monetigo's, and to help accelerate value and slow down or potentially shrink the trade finance gap?
The ICC, DSI, and their good work about standardizing trade data. Obviously, trade finance is reliant on data, preferably very high quality, verifiable data. And due to the nature of trade, it's about enabling the transference of said data across the ecosystem, across jurisdictions, through businesses, banks, financiers, fintechs, and many more. What MDBs and governments alike can do, a practical example to enable more trade using sort of risk mitigation tools, say, you know, in our case, is we can look to India as a case study. Our secure financing solution there is live, where we've helped factors and financiers across that ecosystem shut fraudsters out of the trade finance market. Now, many billions of dollars of risk-free trade passes through our system in India each month. And year on year, we've seen near 200% growth in throughput since inception. So what that means is, again, that be it a multilateral bank or a central bank or the like, a public-private partnership where a central bank has enabled the use of a technology in a country to subsequently de-risk an ecosystem and encourage more financing to those that need it most, be it the SMEs and MSMEs, has a real impact. When we talk about fraud rates and how these multilateral banks and their positioning is very important because of how their reach is. Globally, we see fraud rates range between 1% and 6% on all transactions, varying across different jurisdictions, of course. That's with the users that know there's a technology deterrent in place. So what about the countries yet that don't have a deterrent? Fraud rates we see in, say, developed markets, countries of developed economies, have duplicate financing rates that range anywhere in the last financial year between 17 and 37% of lenders suffering duplicate financing fraud. And in Asia, in, say, emerging markets, we've seen this number as high as 85% of financiers suffering the same kind of frauds in certain countries. So what this highlights is the need for more proactive public-private partnership across the board to enable increased domestic and cross-border fraud prevention to enable safer trade finance environments. And speaking specifically of developing countries and economies, we've recently been engaged with another MDB to de-risk trade across an entire continent, actually, with a single infrastructure. And why not? imagine de-risking just one single market, increasing liquidity to the SMEs, MSMEs, and how important that is to unlock the capital needed to really make a difference. But in this case, not just on a country by country basis, but an entire continent. And that was very incredibly exciting and would have an immeasurable impact on hundreds of millions of lives.
And I want to follow up on that because you're mentioning the need for public-private partnership in this area. But let's talk a bit about the technical aspect or a product aspect. Every region is very different, has different needs when it comes to trade finance, risk, technology, et cetera. What has Manego actually seen across multiple jurisdictions? What works regardless of the regional differences or the regional regulations?
The world is, of course, a very diverse place of variations in culture and the like, but foundationally, no matter the economic standing of any one country, many things are the same. Specific to trade, of course, it's the underlying documents being used as collateral, be it invoices, bills of lading, purchase orders, warehouse receipts, and so on. So, you know, work that Steve's done, the ICC DSI, standardizing these documents and standardizing risk mitigation through APIs and global standards is incredibly important. Our partnership at Manetigo with SWIFT to set global standards of cross-border and cross-document fraud prevention was a world first, something we're very proud of, and yet to be repeated, actually. And what's important is also the price point. Having solutions with economies of scale is incredibly important too. So why should one bank in one jurisdiction pay more than another bank in another jurisdiction? That's not how this should work. Trade is, of course, very much cross-border. And something that's going to really have any impact in this industry, I believe, needs to be 10x cheaper and 10x more efficient than the current system. And going back to the bureaucracy and archaic architecture that Steve mentioned earlier, I don't think actually that should be that difficult. The interoperability is key to trade risk mitigation and trade digitalization to really have an impact. I guess for our own failings, to be honest, Manetigo's learned many years ago that having siloed country-specific infrastructure has some effectiveness, but limited nonetheless. So what we mean by that is that trade's obviously as much cross-border as it is domestic, and of course, cross-document too. Supply chains obviously are interlinked, and major countries can't alone reap the benefit of being able to de-risk their own ecosystem. Developed countries are safeguarding their operations, and developing countries shouldn't be left behind. The same infrastructure, the same technology, the same digitalization initiative should be available to all, no one country or jurisdiction, no matter their economic standing, no matter how much money they've got.
Great. Thank you very much, Neil. I really appreciate the information and experience from Manetigo here. And I like to challenge our guests at the end of every podcast to give a quick blurb about what you're taking away from this podcast. And I'll go first. I really am taking away that the standardization of documents, definitions, and the process is the vital step for us. Neil, what do you think?
Good couple. Thank you, Brian. Yes, I agree. I guess, you know, the mantra of Manetigo, and to echo the sentiment of Steve, standardization of documents, standardization of initiatives in partnership or concurrently at the same time with ecosystem approach, central banks coming together, the major trade associations coming together. And importantly, I would like to highlight the banks coming together to create alignment between their own interests and their own initiatives. Would expedite adoption of risk mitigation technologies. It would expedite digitalization of trade, and it would make an immeasurable difference to hundreds of millions of lives if everybody kind of got on the same page.
Well said, Neil. That's exactly what I was going to try to hammer home. The only way that these issues can be addressed is through everyone's involvement. And there really are the mechanisms for banks and companies and others to pitch into these different efforts that we've been talking about over the past several minutes. And without that kind of engagement, it's just not going to happen. Because if you don't have everyone that's involved in the ecosystem, exporters, shipping, ports, customs, warehousing, logistics, finance, insurance, importers working on this stuff together, then you're not going to be able to harmonize these documents and reach a common understanding of what the standard is. And the same applies for governments. There has to be more harmony and more sort of drive of purpose around crossing the finish line on these issues. And, you know, once we do get there, it'll be amazing how transformative it is. Thank you.
I want to thank Stephen Beck of ADB and Neil Schonard of Manetigo for joining us today on Trade Finance Talks. And as always, we will be speaking again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.